Welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with myself, your host, Jordan Jarrett Bryan. And we are back after our winter break, our mid-season break. We had a few weeks off. Well-deserved break, I think. But we're back for the first pod of 2019. Hope everyone had a great Christmas and a great new year. I'm joined on the pod this week by our Chelsea regular G. G, what you say, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
You well?
Yeah, I mean, I think the title race is over for this year, but...
Last time you were on, you were saying you were fully in the title race.
Yeah, as we were. But, you know,
things changed, is that what you're saying?
We slipped a little off the pace.
You were never in no race.
But you never know, you know, one or two signings here, we might be able to push ourselves back.
Listen, man, you're done, man. Just try and lock off top four, that title race. You're not about this life. And I'm also joined by Tottenham supporter and kick it out main man, ooh, Mr. Troy Townsend. How you doing, sir?
Good evening. Absolute pleasure to be back.
Looking all suave and milk chocolate like, with them fancy polo necks.
Well, it's Christmas and things. You know what I mean?
It's really not.
No, it's just past. Okay. I've got to wear my Christmas gear.
Fair enough. Yeah. Otherwise, you well?
I'm good. Yeah.
Good Christmas.
A little bit sweaty, but yeah, all good. Very quiet, but excellent Christmas, and looking forward to what the new year brings.
Good. So it's going to be a big new year. I can feel it. I can feel it in my bones. We will also be joined by Susie Rack from The Guardian down the line a little bit later on. We talk a little bit about women's football, but that's our studio lineup for today. Just typical that the 3 or 4 weeks that we take off as a break is the month that is the busiest, arguably, football month of the season. Sterling racially abused, City losing to Chelsea, City beating Liverpool, Liverpool being top of the league, Jose being sacked, all
can
these big stories.
City losing to Palace as well, please.
All right, that too. A wonder goal of the season contender from someone to my right who
have
it's a contender. I think the Arsenal goal against Leicester, the back to front. I think that's
we'll
be going over some of the issues that we have missed over the last month, some of the stuff, including the PSG racial profiling. We'll be exploring that at some point over the next few weeks, and also Manchester City and their dodgy financial movements. We'll be exploring that too. So don't worry, we will be going over some of issues that we have not been around to do. Also another announcement before we get into the pod, guys, just an announcement to all of our listeners. We will be doing later this year some FFP live shows. So from spring onwards, we will be doing some FFP lives.
Do I have to put my bid in now?
Get your bid in now.
Wow.
So the team is planning some live shows to bring all you guys to the fans that listen to the pod. Also, if any of you guys know anybody that might want to sponsor the podcast, has a new kind of, you know, fat wallets out there, hit us up, let us know, get in touch. I'm not looking for big money. Not looking for big P, just, you know, little money to kind of help us get tide us over. G, you love the pod.
Yeah,
you got any money?
My friend's got a company called JJB Fencing. I'll see if I can get him to sponsor.
Troy,
cut down on the cost because obviously the fingers have half.
Listen, you're lucky there's snacks here this week, yeah? So let's just eat the money here, yeah? And finally, don't forget to follow us on all of our socials. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you haven't already subscribed, please do via iTunes and Spotify. Leave us a message. They do make a difference. So please keep in touch with us. And thank you for your messages over the Christmas period. Right. Let's get into a couple of quick drive-bys, guys. You know the rules by now. I'll give you a minute. I'll ask you a question individually. And you have a minute and a minute no more. And you cannot be interrupted by anybody else on the panel. I will start with you, Troy.
He always does that. He gives you the eyes. Yeah. Makes you
no look away part ones, then ones. Troy, who, in your opinion, this season so far has been the best player or the most impressive player outside the top six?
Ooh, outside the top six.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you've thrown that one on me.
Yep.
I would have, you know, if we were talking probably about 6 weeks ago, I would have hands down tied it down to Wilf Zaha. Who obviously is Palace's talisman, but he's gone off the boil. He's not. I don't know. Wilf came out and spoke about, you know, the tackles against him, the contribution of the referees and stuff. And since then, he's lost his game a little bit. Outside the top six, that's really thrown it on me. Madison's done well at Leicester, although I think he's dipped form as well lately. Richarlison done well. I think we're in a period at the moment where if you want me to be totally honest, hasn't really been a standout. No, I know I'm taking the cheap shot here, but
no, you are.
In terms of
I think you've got a point. It's a hard question.
Yeah, in terms of like standout, I don't think we're really. And to be fair, you know, there's been one standout player, and that's Van Dijk at Liverpool. And I don't think there's anyone that's probably come near to him in terms of the pecking order at the moment. People always look at goals and think, you know, goals make thing, but. You've got me. You've stumped me.
Anatovic.
You've stumped me.
Anatovic?
Nah.
I'm not having him.
In and out. Does well when he's playing. Misses too many games. But you're supposed to, I suppose you look at his value and his worth and you say what he's worth to West Ham, yeah, might be. But I'd put him in the same bracket as Zaha, to be totally honest, as one of those players that, yes, on his day, you know, you'd pay to go and watch players like that. But at the moment, I just think that... maybe not contribute enough, or maybe that, far that, too that, many.
That's
injuries.
A minute now. You've gone to 2 minutes now.
No one from Man United, no?
Them early shots. Wow, okay. Gene, your question. Marco Silva.
Yep.
If he doesn't win a cup this year.
You would have preferred that question, Janana.
Or secure seventh. Are my question marks about how good he is, are they justified? Or does he need at least another second year to really make his imprint on that team?
I think he needs at least a second year from my perspective. We know the way football is now. He will be judged earlier. People are going to look at him at the end of this season and say, how's he done? And base it on that. But I think he needs another second year. Everton haven't exactly not a top six or top seven side traditionally. I know with Moyes, they were going up and down. Mm-hmm. There's no defined right for them to get there. And yes, they have spent a bit of money, but then, everyone spends money now, and you know what they've spent, although it might have seemed quite big for them, it's probably quite moderate apart from Tottenham and the other sides that they're trying to compete with. So I'll be willing to give them another year. I still feel like they need like a real big goal scorer, although everyone's looking for one of those. I think he's done. He's got good out of Richarlison. He came for big money, but he seems to be delivering. I like the way he's integrating Calvert-Lewin, in here and there in games as well. So no, I'll be willing to give him another season. I understand your concerns, but I've always felt you've been harsh with him anyway. I think he's done a good job wherever he's gone in the Prem so far, and I'd be willing to give him a bit longer to do this job well too.
Okay, right guys, let's start. I want to talk first of all about Chelsea. And Chelsea, a section of Chelsea's fan base in particular, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we all know about the incident that happened at the Manchester City or Chelsea Manchester City game that Chelsea won. Was it 1-0, 2-0, 1-0?
It was
2-0. And the first half, I believe, Raheem Sterling was abused. I'm going to say racially abused. I know some people are saying it wasn't racial. I don't care. I'm going to say it was racist. And we saw the post the following day that Sterling put up on Instagram. Days later, Chelsea have a game in Europe, and there was reports of some anti-Semitic chanting and songs being sung at that away game there. And I want to discuss with you guys about Chelsea's fan base in particular, and I must caveat from the get-go by saying I'm fully aware that racism is something that completely runs through society, runs through football, and there are races at every single football club amongst its fan base. So let's just get that from the get-go. I'm not saying Chelsea are the only club to have fans who are racist, but I do want to discuss, and I do wonder if a section of Chelsea's fan base are worse than, let's say, the other 19 Premier League clubs, as an example. They have a bigger problem than other teams. I want to bring in Dan Levine here, who I know is a journalist and follows Chelsea home and abroad. And I believe Dan was at that game away in the Europa League. Dan, how you doing, man?
Hi, good, mate. Yourself?
I'm very well. I'm very well, thank you. Cheers for coming on the pod, mate. Dan, let me start off by asking you... you were at that game, first of all, wasn't you? The away game in the Europa League against Vidi. You, I believe, were actually, there was some chants and songs directed your way. Am I right in saying that? What do you remember of that particular game?
That was unfortunately a part of it. To be honest, as a game, it was, for the most part, quite a normal game. Mm-hmm. And the reporting of anti-Semitic chants at that game was, I'm afraid to say, having followed Chelsea for a long, long time, not in any way unusual. However, it was particularly head-grabbing because, of course, it came immediately after the really quite unpleasant business with Raheem Sterling. And the point that made it just really so depressing was that people knew that the world was watching them, and they lasted precisely 3 minutes into that game before they kicked off with us again. And that was just really very, very disappointing.
And I know that you follow Chelsea more than any other club, so this might be a difficult question to answer, but in your mind, do you feel that the Chelsea fan base have a bigger problem with racism and anti-Semitism than other fan groups of other Premier League clubs?
It is a difficult one to answer. You know, I do follow Chelsea almost exclusively. I'll admit now, I'm a Chelsea fan. Mm-hmm. I've been a Chelsea fan for 34 years. I've been covering the club as a journalist for about the last 15, maybe a bit more than that. And I wrote a piece in the summer saying that I couldn't remember a single game in those 34 years where I hadn't heard at least some racist chanting. Now, that in itself is a pretty depressing statement, but, you know, that's how it is. I can't tell you whether it's any worse than it is other places, because I obviously go up and down the country, I see other teams. It does happen everywhere else, as you rightly say. Unfortunately, every club does have racists, and every now and again, every club does have racist chanting. But I can't believe there are too many that have got a record quite like that.
Gabriel, you're a Chelsea fan. Yep. I know that you go to many, if not all, the Chelsea home games. Yep. I had a big argument with my dad, who's a Chelsea fan, mm-hmm. off the back of the Manchester City-Chelsea game. And I made this point to him. I said, I think that your fan base have a bigger problem. And I stressed that word bigger, mm-hmm. not sole problem, bigger problem than other fan groups. And my rationale for making that point was that whenever there seems to be this sort of thing coming up in the news, it more often than not tends to be Chelsea.
Yeah.
As a Chelsea fan, do you think that's an unfair statement, or do you feel that the way that you're combating racism amongst your fan base and club is failing?
I think you'd have to say that there is some credence to the statement, because, you know, I mean, ultimately, like you said, the stories are more likely to be linked with Chelsea. I think there also is an element of it is what I'd say is, and I say this to everyone I have this discussion with, Chelsea are one of maybe around 10 clubs in the country that still has a big hooligan element to them. I'd include like Leeds, Millwall, West Ham, maybe even Tottenham to a certain extent. And I think whenever you get hooligans, you get more yobbish type behaviour. Mm-hmm. But Chelsea just happen to be the most high profile club of those clubs who still have that element. And I feel that's why, yes, to that extent, we have a problem dealing with hooliganism and racism that comes as a result of it. So yes, there is a point to what you're saying. I would also say, in terms of the other stuff, in terms of reporting, so because of our history, I do feel that sometimes there is disproportionate amount of reporting when it happens with Chelsea. I mean, and it's a reputation that we've earned upon ourselves, so we can't shy away from it. But if I say there was the incident recently where the Y word was said at the Emirates as well, and I look at the coverage of that compared to the coverage that the Y word being said at the Vidi game got, it was definitely wasn't proportionate. So there is an element, I think, of, you know, it's Chelsea again, and then there's a bandwagon, but we can't hide or get away from the fact that there is a big problem at Chelsea that needs to be addressed. I don't know if I could, it's difficult because the club is failing, but what do you do? Where's the template? Where is it that
it's been, working?
It's working. It's been successful. I don't think it's working anywhere. I do think that the club do take action when it comes about. I think we could all do more. And if there are things that we can do, that the club can do more, I think they should do them.
Yeah.
But, I don't, it's difficult to say whether it's the club's failing or whether that's just a part of that fan base.
Troy, I mean, Kick It Out, you obviously get calls from all fans that support all different types of clubs. Do you think that whatever it is Do you agree that whatever it is that Chelsea are doing is not working? And do you have any kind of theories as to why maybe what they're doing isn't working? Is it a reputation, as G says, that they've to some degree earned themselves, and therefore when these incidents do happen, Chelsea will be the team that, well, it's Chelsea again. Obviously it's Chelsea. Yeah. Where are they going wrong that maybe other clubs aren't doing as bad a job as they are?
I think it's wrong to kind of almost classify them as top of the table. Mm-hmm. I think what we have a massive problem in this country that we kind of felt had gone away, but many working in the game and many around the game knew hadn't gone away really. They as a club, and I think football in general in this country, doesn't throw down the law in the strongest manner that it should. I think if the game started to throw down banning orders and kind of exercising the right to not have these fans within their stadium, I think it will send a much stronger message. We spend far too long with the nitty gritty, the legal side of things, without really stamping our feet and making sure that the kind of people that were hurling that racial abuse at Raheem Sterling, you know, what did Chelsea do wrong there? They didn't get them straight away and eject them from the ground and hold them, you know, hand them over to the police and let that action take its course immediately. They didn't come out and condemn the actions immediately. You know, the support for Raheem Sterling came 24 hours later from the football industry. Where were they on Saturday night when he probably needed it the most? But waited until he then said his piece to then come out and support the individual, etc. You know, when players walk on a football pitch, they walk on a football pitch because they love and enjoy the game of football. They don't go on the football pitch to receive the kind of abuse that is being handed out and continues to be handed out up and down the country, by the way. So the responsibility is, one, do the officials empower them to report? So Raheem smiled, he laughed, he'd heard it before. Whatever, let's get on with it. Do you know what I mean? There was a game to win. You know, there's an obligation from all elements of the game here to do better, because this thing is not creeping into our game. It's there. Mm-hmm. It's in our game. There was a banana on a football pitch the week before that in a North London derby. I never thought I'd see another banana, you know, after the John Barnes 1988, not in this country anyway. And I'm always one saying that we do so much better than what they do in European countries. But people are judging us now in the same way as those European countries, and quite rightly, because we haven't resolved the issues within our game, and it's not just the clubs to do it. It's the whole game to really get to the bottom of the issues and to start. And I'm not saying put these people back into society and never let them in the ground again. What I'm saying is there needs to be an educational process behind who these individuals are, so that if they do have to go back into society, they go back in an educated manner rather than the mobbish mentality that we continue to have, and obviously Chelsea have had as a football club. But I wouldn't say that they're, you know, Chelsea fans will say, well, it's West Ham. West Ham fans will say it's Tottenham. Tottenham will say it's Arsenal. Mm. So let's not get into this, you know, are they worse than anyone else? We've got a problem that we have to deal with, and we need to deal with it.
Dan, when you said at the start there that it's a problem that you've kind of always known happened at Chelsea for years and years and years. When you see these songs being sung and the chants being chanted, what is the reaction from other Chelsea fans who are not involved in these songs and chants? And is there just now an acceptance that, oh, that's just a small group of idiots and racists? Or do you ever see people confronting these fans? What's the general reaction from the majority who I'm sure are not racist?
It's a very mixed bag, really, because it's been going on for so long. In a lot of ways, people tune it out. If you think of the white noise created by a TV, if you leave it on overnight, you can almost sleep through it sometimes, and sometimes for a lot of people it's become like that at Chelsea. You can almost completely block it out and ignore it. I have seen people confront it in person. I've confronted it myself in person on trains to games, where I've had words with lads about this, and often people are embarrassed and they're ashamed. Sometimes they're actually quite violent, sometimes they're quite unpleasant, but you know, for the most part I find that people are really actually, you know, just quite embarrassed by it. But I think also it's important to say at the moment that there's special things, I think, happening at Chelsea. Man, this has been going on for a long, long time, and I think a lot of people are fed up with it by now. The Raheem Sterling incident, I think, is a real watershed, particularly at Chelsea. I've been really calling out the anti-Semitic stuff that's been on for the last few weeks, and I've had loads and loads of threats and abuse for that. But at the same time, I've had loads of support. And it's really, really heartening to see the number of Chelsea supporter groups that are currently rallying around and really want to change this reputation the club's got.
With Roman Abramovich being the owner of your club, yeah. Does that make it all the more backwards that, you know, you've got this group of fans that are being anti-Semitic? And do you have a concern that if this doesn't get resolved, he might think to himself, well, what the hell am I doing here?
Yeah, Jordan, it's a really strange situation, and it's a situation of real under-education, because I mean, no one says this to me directly, but you hear little murmurings and you get the feeling that people really don't feel that they're being racist, because they don't feel they're being racist. They feel empowered to continue to say it. Mm. And, you know, I just kind of think we've gone over the argument so many times. It's just time to just stop using the word. It's great. It's funny because last year we had the situation where Morata started scoring, and then there was the Y Word song around Morata. But this song that and Dan can back it up, that was used recently in the game at Vidi, I pretty much probably heard it every week, and that is downwards of white noise. I almost forgot that the white word was a part of the song.
Okay.
Because it's right at the end, and it isn't. And it's difficult. This is going to sound like as if I'm making excuses, but it isn't necessarily used in a way to be offensive. It's a way to describe Tottenham fans, because Tottenham fans are allowed to, well, from what I know, we can say it and they can't, then there is this feeling of the fact, well, we're not being racist, so I'm going to keep on saying. I've heard chants saying, you know, we can't say the Y word, we'll just call you, see you next Tuesday, and things like that. It's it's a feeling of, like defiance against the establishment and being picked on by a certain group.
Let me ask you, Troy, is there a point now where Tottenham fans may have to just stop using that word, do you feel like they shouldn't have to just because it's been used in a negative way against them?
The problem is that there'll be amount of groups now, including Tottenham supporter groups, that do not want it used. And you'll probably get into the same situation as what you have at Chelsea here, is that there'll be elements of those fans that said, I've sung this song ever since the day that I've supported this football club, and I'll continue to sing it. So this is why I say that until we take the strongest action, until the club start working with the police and the police start working with whoever it may be, then you'll have those element of fans that will continue to sing that song, you know, regardless of what they feel may happen to them, because at the moment nothing's happening to them, you know, and it doesn't matter whether they think it's offensive or another club uses it and it's not offensive. If someone somewhere in the ground or on television is offended by the song and it gets reported, then action has to be taken. And I think that's where we are now. You know, every so often rules start to change. And what was significant in the past or was able to be sung in the past can no longer be sung because of its impact it has on this generation. Mm. And I think that's the state where we are at the moment. And I know for a fact that there'll be questions levelled back to Tottenham as to the use of the word, and there'll be groups asking questions about the fact that it's still being used in this day and age.
Yeah. I'm going to Tottenham tomorrow for the FA Cup, Carling Carabao Cup, whatever cup it is.
The Rumblers.
I fully expect to hear the Y word on both sides. And I'd be shocked if I didn't. And that's really sad.
Yeah. Dan, let me give you the final word. Are you going to the game tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll be there.
You are.
And I've got to say, I have much the same thoughts as Gabriel about that. I'll be very surprised if it doesn't come out. There's two things I think both Gabriel and Troy have touched on here. There is both the punishment aspect. You know, people actually do need to be held to account for these things. But there's also the education. And Chelsea Supporters Trust ran a really good piece on their website last night, I think it was, where they spoke to two Jewish fans who'd been in the Matthew Harding lower. They called them Karen and Jack. I don't think that's their real names. And they said that they heard abuse from behind. We hate the Y word. We hate the Y word over and over again. And if you read those people's words and you hear just how distraught and how disgusted they were by that, I don't think anyone can possibly be mistaken that it's an offensive word. So I think, you know, that job of education is going on. Chelsea are doing a lot of stuff with it. They've got their campaign against anti-Semitism. People really need to come into the modern day and need to realise it's time things changed.
Agree. Dan, just come on the pod, man. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you very much. Take care.
I was just going to say, on Dan's point there, obviously we've recently done a film with Chelsea around anti-Semitism as
well.
Club is taking it seriously. But again, it's down to whether the fans want to watch it or not.
Yeah.
It's down to whether they want to receive the education and take in the kind of information that's being provided and know that it's not part of the club's ethos.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find is, obviously, that film was released, the situation with Raheem Sterling happened, and 4 days later, fans are like, yeah, so what? This is us. This
yeah.
And that's it. It's the fans who believe that they own, you know, the songs, the words, and that's why football really has to take ownership and really has to start coming down. You know, you take someone's season ticket away, or you take it away for 2-3 years, they're going to start thinking about every Saturday when they're actually going, what I don't know, see. Wherever they may be, rather than going and watching football, you know. So we really have to, you know, start really nailing down the impact of the language, and also nailing down what we do as an afterthought to banning people as well.
Are you going to the game tomorrow?
I won't be at the game tomorrow. Okay.
Troy, you mentioned about kind of, sorry to stop your...
No, go on.
George, but, you said, about, I mean, I'm not just talking about Chelsea, just in general. Do you hear things that are reported, proven, and then people are not banned?
Listen, the whole process, if you ask me, and maybe this is going to go out, but maybe it's not great. You know, there is banning orders. There's also people who feel that despite a banning order, you know, I'm not going to change my views and I'm not going to change my ways. You know, we do quite a lot of work in bringing people in and letting them understand their ways. But ultimately, once they go back out into the free world as such, they can be whoever they want to be, you know. So we're at a stage where, yes, people are getting banned. Yes, there's also not enough evidence to ban certain people and allow to continue to be who they are. And that's why I say, you know, this evidence and all of what we're doing needs to come out more, be fleshed out more into the open, so that people can really understand the impact of it and what the consequences are.
Right, I'm sure we'll be coming back to that topic, especially after the two-legged game between both your respective clubs. But let's move on now, guys. I want to talk about, or we're going to talk about, Spurs and Pochettino a bit later on. But we love it as Troy winces. But before we talk about Spurs, I want to talk about women's football, a little bit about the women's game. There's a few different things I want to go through. And to do so, I did promise at the top of the show we would bring in Susie Rack from The Guardian. Susie, how are you doing?
Jordan, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for coming on the pod.
No problem today,
right, so there's a few things I want to kind of rattle through in regards to the women's game. First of all, the World Cup is this year, Women's World Cup. Where would you rank England in the list of teams who you think will win the World Cup?
I think England's right up there, but it's really hard to look past the USA at the moment. They are super strong. And one of the things that I was looking at yesterday, in fact, is that the US have 10 really high-level friendlies lined up between now and the start of the World Cup. England have 3. And I just, for me, that's the sign of a team that is preparing to retain their title, and one that isn't necessarily looking to challenge to the same extent. I mean, you could say, oh, they're going to be on camp and working on training and stuff, but... I just don't think it's the same. France are going to be massively competitive, and for me, it's England, France, and the USA that are going to be favourites for the tournament. But it's very hard to look beyond the US.
How much progress have we made as a nation, Susie, in terms of participation since the last World Cup where England came third? Is it just kind of rhetoric to kind of say that numbers are going up, more women are playing football, more girls are playing football, or do the stats actually back up that since there was that massive success from the women's team in Canada 4 years ago, that, you know, there are more girls taking part and there are more people going to games?
Yeah, there are. It has gone up massively. Obviously, we've got the fully professional top tier, the semi-professional second tier. They're the first professional leagues in the world, and I think that's a massive step forward, and has grown the game to a large extent. The England youth levels, kind of like the men's, have been doing really well. The under 21s won bronze in the summer at the under 20 World Cup. There's a huge amount of young talent coming through, and it's young players that haven't had to work alongside playing for the first time ever coming through, so that the quality and the level of their development is much, much higher than kind of the players that were playing in 2015, who all at some stage, you know, Alex Scott, clean boots in the Arsenal boot room, and loads of them had jobs to kind of supplement playing. So the difference is the talent is much more professional, much fitter, more competitive at an earlier age, and they're starting to feed into the England pool. And I think one of the things that Phil Neville said when he first came in was he wanted to increase the pool of players that you have to choose from, and now he's got about 30 players that he's kind of looking at pulling into his squad. And that's only getting bigger. There's, like I say, those young teams, the under-19s, the under-17s, they're doing really well at big international tournaments, and that's been a massive change.
Brilliant. I'm going to turn to you, Troy, now. I know you heard about the story that broke this morning about the Spurs women's player, Renny Hector, mm-hmm. who posted on Twitter this morning, I think it was.
Last night.
Yeah. That she had been racially abused by another player.
Yeah.
At a game against Sheffield United ladies. Is racism in the women's game as prevalent as it is in the men's game? Obviously, the numbers are less, but comparatively, is it a big issue, or was you shocked? Is this a one-off in your experience?
I wasn't shocked because, like we said earlier, racism is there.
Mm.
It's everywhere. It exists. Was I shocked at player on player yesterday? Yeah, I think slightly I was. You know, monkey noises, we hear that all the time, and to hear that, you know, in the women's game now is worrying. It's, for me, it needs to be treated in the same way that it would be treated in the male game. You know, we don't know who the player was.
I think it needs to be treated better.
Sorry, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sorry, because we haven't conquered it in the male side of the game. But listen, should the player be identified? I was having a conversation with someone earlier. Obviously, Renee knows who that player is. The referee said didn't hear it. For me, that player should be identified and then battle their own corner as to whether they did say or didn't mm-hmm. say or made the noises that they said. It's the only way that we're going to start to combat this, because at the moment, everyone knows that Rennie was involved,
mm-hmm.
but no one knows who the opposition person. Player was involved. Yeah. We know that it was an opposition player because she said it in her statement, but no one's called it out. I would hope this is probably going to be as significant as the Raheem Sterling situation, you know, at Chelsea, because depending on what steps are taken here, depending on what evidence is given, and obviously if the referee didn't hear it, we got to go some to try and get what I would call a conviction here.
Mm-hmm.
This could be quite significant in terms of not escalating in the women's game, and taking the lead, really, that, like we've said, the men's game could probably hopefully
nip in the bud early.
Yeah.
Just briefly, Susie, was you surprised that going to all the games you go to, have you heard, you know, seen any kind of incidents like this, or was you shocked?
Like Troy said, I wouldn't say I was shocked, but I was particularly surprised, similarly to hear it was about an opposition player. I've heard about homophobic abuse in the crowds at women's games, which is extremely surprising, because generally that's something that's not as big of an issue in the women's game than it is the men's. So I'm not surprised to see that there's accusations of racism, but yeah, like I said, player on player, I think is a bit shocking, and I think all of the kind of stuff going on at Chelsea, the Sterling stuff, the historic abuse of players in the academy and things like that, they're not removed from society, and neither is women's football. You know, the women's football is just as much a society as men's football.
Indeed.
And football reflects society, and the worst aspects of society are going to be prevalent in football, and it's just about how you deal with it and how teams and clubs and the authorities respond to it that matters.
And just finally, Susie, I want to go back a few weeks now to the Ballon d'Or winner, Ada Hegerberg, the Lyon and Norwegian player. Great day for her. Great day for women's football as well. And we all know the incident that happened with the DJ host that made the sexist comment about, well, he asked her, I believe, if she could twerk. And there was justifiable outrage at that. One of my guests, Gabriel here, what were your thoughts on that? And I want you to explain to Susie your thoughts. Now, Susie, I want you to don't go lightly on him.
How you doing, Susie?
Good, thanks, Susie.
Good. So, the morning after the incident happened, Jordan came in the group and WhatsApp group that we're in and said that he thought that it was a deliberate act of sexism by someone using their white male privilege. My view on that differed slightly. I felt it was a severely ill-judged comment, which definitely had a sexist undertone to it. But I didn't get the impression that it was done deliberately to either put the person down or to be sexist. I just think the guy didn't really think through what he was saying and ended up saying something really stupid. But Jordan disagreed, and I take it you probably would disagree as well.
I don't completely disagree, and I do think it was an extreme moment of stupidity. It's hard to know whether that guy is genuinely sexist, but just the incident itself, you know, points a certain way. I think it's almost born from never being challenged over those things, and if you're not challenged on them, then you think it's acceptable to say them. I mean, the ridiculous tweet that Iniesta sent out this morning has been pictured posing with people with blackface.
Yeah.
Is he racist? I don't know. Is he stupid? Extremely.
Add Wayne Hennessy to that, Susie.
That? Yeah, exactly.
Sorry to throw you, but yeah.
His insane answer in reply as well, which is...
It was even worse, wasn't it? Rubbish. Well, yeah. Susie, sorry to cut you. The only reason I threw in the fact that I thought it was an example of white male privilege was because a lot of these white guys, they know they can say things and get away with them in a way that a black person couldn't say that. A woman, there's certain things that women couldn't say. I just think a lot of these white guys say things knowing that because they're white and they're male, there's no accountability for it.
Can I come in?
Go
because
on.
I mean, this guy's a DJ who would never have been in a footballing environment like that before in terms of the presentation, etc. I wholeheartedly agree with you that he has made that comment, and I agree that it's a sexist comment. I agree that he thought that the footballing world would see it as a joke. And it's turned around very, very quickly on him, and it's made him obviously look stupid. He's not necessarily a sexist, but it's probably a comment that he's got away with 9.5 times out of 10 in his own environment, and everyone laughs, pats him on the back, and says, "Aren't you funny?"
Doesn't mean it's not sexist, though. Just because he gets away with it normally.
Doesn't mean he may not be sexist. Susie's alluded to the fact that it doesn't mean he's sexist, but it's a stupid comment, and which I totally agree. But ultimately, then, we have to break that down and say, if he is someone who actually does throw that out, whether it's in his environment where it's accepted or not, then we have to say that the guy is sexist.
Final word to you, Susie.
What is white privilege? I mean, like you say, my position is that he's probably never been challenged on this before, like you said, that he thinks he can get away with this kind of thing, that he thinks he's never going to be challenged. And what is that? What is that attitude born from? It's born from a position of privilege. It's born from a position of always being made to feel like you're right, that your opinion matters, and that is something that white men have a lot more than women or BAME member society. It is a privileged position, and it does give them the ability to get away with stupid things. Luckily, we're in a time where people are getting called out on these things a lot more. And I think, you know, things like Me Too and things like that have had a huge influence on attitudes more generally in society. I agree and disagree, and that definitely stupid and born from a position of privilege, the stupidity.
Susie, thanks for your time. Can we get you in the studio next time, please?
Definitely.
Cheers for coming on. Take care.
My son, thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care. See you then. Okay, let's move on to our final topic, gentlemen. I want to talk about Poch. Process or prizes? Now, I'm a fan, I think, as most people are, Pochettino. I like what he's done with Tottenham. I think it would be stupid to suggest that he hasn't improved the team, improved the club, as G and Troy make their way to the fingers. As you can, that's what you can hear rattling in the background, as we're recording. Thanks, gentlemen. I want to talk about where we think he will be next year. I'll start off with you, Troy. He's odds on favourite to be the next Man United manager. If United make a move, and if we're led to believe is correct, he's their number one target. If they make a move, is this for you a hard decision for him? Or do you think that it's actually an easy one, ergo, of course you go to United, or I'm doing some good things here at Spurs, why would I leave?
I think it's a massively difficult decision. I don't think it's just United, by the way. Mm-hmm. Real Madrid are struggling again.
Agreed.
You know, they've given a new manager a contract and he's struggling. So there could be more people knocking on Poch's door. For me, he has to deliver. He has to deliver trophies. I think, you know, that initial stage of playing great.
You're football, in that camp. Yeah.
He has to deliver now, you know. We've had the excuses from other people where they haven't made signings. They've ridden that because ultimately he's kept a squad together and has got maximum out of that squad and they're performing absolutely brilliantly, you know. But, you know, I go back to Brazil 82, which maybe long before some of you would have even a step foot on this earth, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That was probably... that was probably... After the 1970 Brazilian team, the best World Cup team...
That didn't win anything.
Mm. They were beautiful on the eye. The football was exceptional. The goals they scored were amazing. All of a sudden, this geezer, Paolo Rossi, comes up, rips up the script and says, see you later. I've got a World Cup to win here.
Arsenal 2004, I'd argue. I'm joking.
Anyway, that was a very good team.
Yeah. But listen, I've still got it on VHS. Has anyone still got VHS?
No.
I've still got Brazil. All right, okay.
Explain to our listeners who are like under the age of 55 what a VHS is.
I'm 52, so stop it. Yeah. VHS is that now? So for me, he's had that pre-time. I know he's blooding some more youngsters now, but he's got more than the core of his team now. Mm-hmm. He has to deliver. There'll be many supporters now that would say, "Oh, Troy, you're chatting crap. We don't mind going Champions League every year." Spurs used to cuss Arsenal for every season getting in the Champions League and not delivering. For me, he has to deliver. The stadium's around the corner. I think he'll stay for another season, if you want me to be totally honest, mm-hmm. unless the pressure from the clubs that I have mentioned is too much. But he's got to come with the goods. He has to come with the goods. And coming with the goods is not losing at home to Wolves when all of a sudden you've been thrown into the title race, you know, and then you let everyone down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Almost, you know, the players, whoever it may be. So for me, there has to be something because winning breeds winning. I don't care what anyone tells me. You win the League Cup, the Carrier Bag Cup, whatever it is we're calling it anymore now.
The Carrier Bag Cup.
You win it, all of a sudden the players start to feel good about
themselves. They believe
themselves. The wave of support changes as well because it's finally, we've done it. We can do it. The parade is different. Everything about it. So all of a sudden, you want to then go and win the FA Cup.
I just got to cut you there, sorry. You get a parade for a League Cup?
They had a parade, a DVD, they had everything.
And at this moment in time, the podcast has changed quite slightly. Listen. When you ain't won nothing since.
Jonathan Woodgate probably got a statue.
It wasn't going to be like that, would it? When you ain't won nothing since. I was there that day, by the way.
Oh, wow. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was as well. Yeah, heartbreaking.
I didn't even go home till I don't know what time because I've never seen that before.
Let me bring in our regular Spanish football expert, Ben Hayward, who is a Spurs fan. Ben, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Jordan. How about you?
I'm very well. Thanks for joining us, man. Now, I normally get you on to do a bit of a roundup of what's happening in La Liga amongst predominantly the big two in Atletico Madrid. But you're a Spurs fan and you've kind of got two hats on here. One, because you're a Spurs fan, but secondly, because you obviously follow Madrid. who I agree with Troy. I actually think if he's going to leave for anybody, I think it's more likely to be Real Madrid. Are you in the Troy camp of before he can be considered for one of those elite jobs, he has to lift the trophy? Or do you feel the work that he's done?
No, he's got me wrong. You're misquoting my words.
This is Jordan all over.
When it goes out, do you know what I mean?
What? Sorry, okay, clarify. Before
clarify
I
get, is... I believe that he won't leave until, like, if they get something this season, I think that he could think, do you know what, I've done what I've delivered, and the lure of a Real Madrid or a Man United might become too much.
Okay, so Ben, Troy's saying if he doesn't win anything, he will not be considered for one of those big clubs. Anyway, are you in that camp, or do you feel that the work that he's done at his time at Spurs is good enough to do a job at a club of the size of Madrid or United?
Yeah, I think he is, Jordan. Absolutely, I think he is. If you look at the clubs that he's coached, I mean, Espanyol, it's very difficult to win a trophy. Tottenham, all right, big club, but you know, they're still big, the sixth largest budget in the Premier League, and it's really hard to win trophies these days with competing against the mega millions of teams like Manchester City and Chelsea, United, you know, Arsenal, others. So I think he's done an amazing job. He's come third, last three seasons. No Spurs coach has done that since Spurs manager has done that since Bill Nicholson, like going back to the 60s,
30s, 20s,
black and white TVs.
It's a long time. I mean, you know, competing against Manchester City, you're competing against a club that's funded by an entire nation,
the state, yeah,
with the best coach around. You know, just throwing money and signing, you know, huge, you know, spending huge amounts of money on all these players. It's very, very difficult. Of course, but around that stage now, I agree that they need to win something, even if it is a League Cup. Although,
I was going to say,
you know, George Graham and Juan de Ramos won League Cups and, you know, didn't do much else. So I do agree with Pochettino that, you know, he's after winning the Premier League or the Champions League. And very, very difficult. But I think he's ready. I think he's ready to coach a Real Madrid or a Manchester United. I think he'd be ideal for either of those clubs. I hope he stays, obviously, but I think he's ready.
How strong are the... How much leg are Real Madrid showing to Pochettino in terms of trying to lure him over, you know, back to Spain? Is that... And especially with United now needing a manager for next season, have Madrid now ramped up their I suppose campaign to make sure that they jump the queue ahead of United in making sure that if Poch does leave, he's looking at them before he's looking at United?
Well, they haven't, not yet, but he was first choice for Real Madrid in the summer when Zidane left the club. Pochettino was first choice to take over, but he'd only just signed a new contract with Tottenham. I think he would have gone if it hadn't been for that new contract. And, you know, Daniel Levy is a tough negotiator. He wasn't going to let him go, you know, days after signing a new deal. Real Madrid could come back in the summer. Obviously, Solari signed a 2.5-year contract up to the end of 2021. But that means nothing
contract.
Real Madrid, as we know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it was almost... you know, it was almost done to kind of put to bed the rumours for a while, to bring in a little bit of stability. But you don't get much of that at Real Madrid.
No.
But yeah, Pochettino will be, he'll be high up the list. And Florentino Perez has admired Pochettino, by the way, ever since he was at Espanyol and beat Barcelona at Camp Nou years and years ago. And I think, you know, it's going to happen at some stage. Although Florentino would also like to bring back Mourinho, which is
there's a massive
idea.
Audition for the job, isn't there, this weekend?
There is.
The Man United job.
And we'll get to that in a second.
Right, okay, I've jumped the gun.
You have. Just a second, man.
Gotta make up for lost time.
Gabriel, I've almost finished his book, Pochettino's book. And in the book, he talks explicitly about the fact that he gets... just as much joy as creating and the process of building a team that can be successful as he does from actually lifting the trophy at the end of it.
Well, has he lifted the trophies?
Well, it's true. How do you compare? It's true. And it's I personally think he'll stay this summer. I've changed my mind. I think he will stay for various reasons I won't go into, but I think he will stay. Do you think that if he does leave, it will make a mockery of what he says in, a lot in the book about the fact that at Spurs he's enjoying building something, growing something, and winning an FA Cup at Spurs, having gone through the 6 years of building that he's done, would give him more joy than winning a Premier League at United having spent 300 million.
I don't think it makes a mockery of it, because, you know, you know, there's always a ceiling of growing something, and maybe fair enough, he hasn't won a Carabao Cup or an FA Cup, but maybe in terms of that team and that talent, I kind of feel like the only way is down. I can't see...
You think he's maxed out with that Tottenham team now?
I can't see the team getting that much better than they're on par with City. They need City, Liverpool, Chelsea
to implode big time.
To have average or bad seasons for them to go ahead and win. Even when they have in the past, like with Leicester, they still didn't capitalise. So I don't think... I don't think it necessarily goes back against what he says. I think he has achieved good things at Tottenham despite the lack of trophies. But I also think, and as I alluded to at the beginning, that's a very easy thing to say when you're not winning any trophies. Win some trophies and then say that you don't care about winning trophies. It's all about putting the pieces together.
The process.
the process and enjoying the love and all of that kind of stuff. Nah, he wants to win. He wants to win trophies. You can see how angry he gets. I remember watching that FA Cup semi-final against United. Like, fuming. He was.
Yeah. And so, having said that, how big is tomorrow's game and the tie against your mob? Do you think that he needs to put out his strongest 11, or do you think that he'll stay to his word and he'll treat the Carabao Cup as the fourth priority, and that will be reflected in the team that he puts out?
I think he does need to put out his strongest 11, but also aside from the strongest 11, I think he needs to step up. One thing that I'd say about that I've always liked in Pochettino is that he does find antidotes to teams when they're doing well. Because I remember, like, a couple of years back when we were, like, on 15 games unbeaten, and he found a way to kind of stop Kante and Matic. He found that, but he always seems to find them at the wrong time. He doesn't seem to find them
in the game that matters,
in the semi-final, in the final, in the game that against Wolves. He doesn't seem to find those antidotes. And I'd like to see if he can find that antidote in, probably not tomorrow, but if he can find that antidote in a game they beat us 3-0, the other weekend and embarrassed us for much of that game. But it wouldn't surprise me if we knocked them out over the two legs, because that seems to be what happens with Pochettino.
Good point. Troy, Paul Mitchell left Southampton back in the day when Poch was there. And from what I've heard, Poch was happy about that. Poch didn't get on with Paul Mitchell. If he goes to United, and the United model seems to be moving towards a DOF, a director of football at the club, how will that work with Pochettino? Because it seems that Ollie, one of our regular Spurs fans, made the point to me a couple of weeks ago that it seems to have gone unnoticed that when Pochettino rocked up at Spurs, he went in as head coach. Whereas now, he's the manager. He has a lot of power there. Well, power that he won't get at United or Madrid.
I wouldn't say won't get, because his stock is very, very high. And if he goes in...
But the DOF's going there regardless.
If he's going to make the move, he's going to make the move on his terms. He won't make the move because it's Manchester United. He won't make the move because it's Real Madrid. If he's going in, if he's going to leave, and I use this term very loosely, cushy job at Tottenham, yeah, and I use it loosely. If he's going to leave that job, he's in a position to demand, like a Mourinho would demand when he goes into a club, you know, because his track record, right, trophyless track record, but track record of producing exciting football, bringing through young players, is a model that most would love at their football club. And I think if he is to up sticks and move, he goes in a position of power, because he's being headhunted by those clubs, you know, and if his position is, I need to do this by myself. I need to bring my team in. I need to bring my group of people in. These are the group of people that I work with that will work well for this football club. You've got to allow him to do it. I can't see a club saying to him, those two clubs saying to him, no, hold on a minute, Poch, you've got to work with blah, 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 blah. If he does have to work with someone, it will be on his terms. And if it doesn't work, that person will soon leave. His stock is that high that he can do that and demand that. And I think before any of them think about appointing this DOF, as they do, and if Poch is the man for them, they really need to think about what will work for him and what won't work for him.
But sorry, let me bring you in there, Ben, on that point. it seems that United are recognising the structure of the club needs to change. You know, the structure at City works well. The structure at Liverpool works well. Even Arsenal, they've taken a lot of power away from a lot of those managers to just be coaches.
But that doesn't work well, does it, Arsenal? Anyway, right. Sorry, I just read that.
Really? Tottenham? Really? Really, Troy? And United, from what I read, want to kind of go into that model of taking power away from the manager, go away from the manager mould, and have a guy in that just can come in, coach players, and win games at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. If that's the case, 5:30, whatever it is, yeah. If that is the case, I don't see how Poch can go there, because they're recognising that the structure is more important than the manager, albeit a very good manager. Do you see a conflict there between where United are going and then still pursuing Pochettino? Do you think it can work? Or, as Troy says, do you think he's that powerful at the moment, he can make them go away from that model?
Yeah, I do. I agree with what Troy says. I mean, you look back to when Mourinho came in at Real Madrid in 2010. There was a similar structure here. Valdano was in place as a kind of general manager, and within a season, he was gone. And Valdano was Florentino Perez's right-hand man. Mourinho came in very much on his terms, and what he didn't like, he was able to change. And I think Pochettino, like Troy was saying, would probably do it on his terms as well. You know, he's pretty unique. He's got his own vision of how, you know, clubs like to be, clubs should be run. And also, obviously, we've seen that at Tottenham. And I think if he were to move, you know, we're talking huge clubs, obviously, Real Madrid and Manchester United. But yeah, he'd want to do it on his terms, because, you know, there's a lot of work to be done, you know, at both of those clubs. All right, at Real Madrid, you could probably sign pretty much who you want, but at Manchester United, you know, they've got a decent team, but to get to the level that Tottenham are at, I mean, Tottenham, you know, he had Harry Kane there just coming through. They got found Dele Alli, which was unbelievable, but Eriksen was already there. You know, he had the core already there. I don't know if United have that. I mean, how long will it take him to get to the stage Tottenham are at now at United? That's the other thing. You know, it's a real project, whereas at Real Madrid, if you go to Real Madrid, you know you're only going to get, however well you do, you're probably only going to be there 2 or 3 years the most. And that's if you're really successful. So then, again, that's a risk as well, because, you know, you've got a good thing going here at Tottenham. You've been there for a few years, stable job, you're building something. Do you leave it now, or do you wait and hope that it will come back up in future? It's a very difficult decision to make, but I agree with Troy. I think he'll do it on his terms.
Just finally, guys, the game this weekend, how much do you think this will tell us about his next move? You know, do we think that if Poch wins this, they go for him aggressively? If Poch loses the game, they think, oh, maybe in the big games you're not the guy. How much can we read into this game this weekend, Troy?
Nothing at all.
It's just
nothing
a game.
At all. It's a game. It's 3 points. I think the game's more about Solskjaer than what it is about Pochettino, because Solskjaer's come in on this crest of a wave, beating whoever he's beaten. Pointless. And everyone's jumped on the fact how the culture's changed. Everyone seems more happy and this, that, and the other. And whilst I get that, you're not judged on those results.
No.
You're judged on the game this against weekend. Spurs. You're judged on your Man Cities. You're judged on your Liverpools. What he's done is had a, and I think they've done it purposely. Yeah. He's had a real cushy kind of entrance into the job.
Clearly, they thought the Liverpool game purposely get Jose after that,
to bring him in, to give him the confidence, to give the players the confidence, to get to the stage where they will now play Tottenham at the highest of their confidence that they have been for quite a long while. And so this is where the pressure will start to tell now for Solskjaer. You know, can he turn things around and produce a performance against Spurs where United haven't done for quite a long time now? You know, yes, you know, at Old Trafford earlier on in the season, first half of Jose Mourinho's Man United were absolutely superb. They got beat 3-0. So ultimately, he's got to now produce something where Man United are on the same playing field as Spurs. And when I say that, I mean, like, performance-wise, results-wise, etc. People will be watching that game intently, not for Poch, for Solskjaer.
I agree. I think he'll get the job. I've got a fiver bet with three friends.
That's how confident Solskjaer. You are that it's a fiver bet.
What were the odds, Joe?
With friends. With friends. I think it'll be Solskjaer, but that's another thing as well. Do you think, just in 10 seconds, do you think he will get the job? And if not, who do you think will be the next Man United manager?
do I think Solskjaer will get the
job? Sorry, do you think Poch will get the will move? And if not, who do you think will get that job?
I think Poch will definitely be approached. I'm 50-50 over whether he'll take the job.
Get off the fence, G. Give me an answer. Yes or no?
Yeah, you think he'll move? I think he'll be. Yeah,
I weren't convinced by what he said. That's for sure.
Well, you forced off the fence. I had to go on one side.
They'll be mad not to approach him. If you want me to be totally honest, I think he stays another season.
Ben, do you think he will be the next Man United manager? And if not, who do you think will?
Well, you know, hopefully not. As a Spurs fan, if you read, you know, you mentioned his book earlier. He talks a lot in his book about how he discusses all of his big decisions with his family. They'll all sit down and discuss it together. I think he'll stay for the meantime. But Real Madrid, probably a different story.
You think he's more likely to be there than at United?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Interesting. Listen, Ben, cheers for your time, mate.
Thanks a lot, Jordan.
Nazar, mate. Take care, bro. Gentlemen,
first pod of 2019. Brilliant. I think you did all right.
I did all right.
When you got it eventually, you did all right. Gee, you were great.
I knew that was coming.
you were great. Thanks for coming on the pod this week, guys. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on all our socials. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We're also on iTunes as well as Spotify. Leave us a message. Leave us a comment. It makes a difference. And review, little 5-rating star. You know, thanks for showing the love. Tell a friend. And until next week, peace.